League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Thursday, June 20th. First, let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me the spitting statistician. I am honored to every morning be joined by FSWA Hall of Famer, El Rey de Fantasía, the King, Scott Angle. Scotty, I'm having a good day. I made some good choices yesterday, the best of which was to not start Joey Lucchese in his start coming back from the DL. I did get a decent, you know, quality start out of Stripling yesterday, even though they lost. I also, you know, Scott, I got a stolen base out of Javier Baez, and we're talking about how Baez and the steals, you know, we were both talking about that. But I got a stolen base yesterday, Scott, out of Joey Gallo. Can you believe that? I'm feeling pretty good. How are you feeling?
Standing-wise, not so good. I continue to drop. I actually moved into third place. But, you know, it's a long season. Hopefully guys will rebound for me. Yes, I had Stripling going, too. It would have been nice to... Would have been nice to get the win. You know, I have Robert Gazelman in my lineup because I thought he might get saves, and they use him in the fifth inning. He gets knocked around in an 18-run game between the Mets and the Rockies. Those teams score a lot of runs and a lot of closer confusion, you know, around the majors. You just don't know what's going on in San Francisco. You don't know what's going on in Philadelphia. It's getting crazy.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Remember, guys, if you want to join the show today, there's plenty of ways you could do that, okay? You could always holler at us at 844-843-6879. You could follow along with us on Twitter, at Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty Roto X. Later on, we'll have Jake Seeley at All In Kid. Also, listen, you could play Roto Cleo with us as well. You could also vote in the poll questions we have. Scotty, I think we got a big one here as we wrap up the quarterfinals, okay? Today, we have the number 2 seed, Aaron Judge, against the number 7 seed, Chris Bryant, out of the Chicago Cubs. How do you think this one is going to shape out? You think this one is going to be close? I think Judge will get the win, but that it'll be one of the closer ones. I'm projecting it to be maybe around a 60-40 kind of split. What do you think, Scott?
It's interesting if we take ourselves out of the New York bubble that we always tend to be in. And Chris Bryant might actually be a bigger face of baseball from a national perspective. Hmm. Now, locally, there's no contest, but Chris Bryant does a lot of promotions. He's very recognizable across the country. And the guy's already won a World Series. Not shocked me to see Bryant win this thing. If we're talking a national vote here and not local, this thing's going to be a lot closer than 60-40.
All right, well, we will see. Get on over there and find our poll and vote on it. It is Judge versus Bryant. Our guy, the Manimal, Chris Bavona, down there in the fantasy pit of misery, will be putting that up momentarily. Hey, Scott.
I'll tell you, though. Both of these guys, though, kind of deserves it in a way because, you know, these are two of the really good guys in the game. Aaron Judge is one of the nicest guys in the game with the fans and the media. Big superstar, gives everybody a piece of his time. And Chris Bryant is very much the same way.
Yeah, so, you know, it should be an interesting matchup. Remember, Scott, we are in the second round, so these guys both have won first-round matchups already. That is a testament to both of their viability kind of in the public relations, being a good guy, that people, they do have that notoriety. Scott, yesterday, the matchup was Jose Altuve and Giancarlo Mike Stanton, right? And both of them had great games. Let's not, oh, as usual, start with the Yankees. Let's start with the Houston Astros, okay? They are starting a new winning streak. They get a W. Altuve responds. He has two home runs. Springer hit his 15th. Bregman hit his 11th. But I want to ask you, you know, you were talking about kind of the bullpens that are unsure of things. Listen, Charlie Morton goes 6. Peacock goes 1. Davinsky pitches the 8th. And it is Ken Giles that pitches the 9th. Now, I know this was like a non-save situation, but do you think this could be a formula that they want? Or are they going to go right back to Rondon? I mean, if they got a lead, do they go 7-8-9, Peacock, Davinsky, and then Giles?
I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to this right now. This is like Philadelphia. This is San Francisco. I think right now that AJ Hinch is just playing the matchups, and I don't think he trusts Hector Rondon as his closer. I can't blame him, and I don't know what's happening here.
It is befuddling, absolutely. But listen,
it's frustrating because as a fantasy owner, you know, you read the closer report from George Kurtz on Roto Experts, and you want to know, you want to know things like, you know, who's the first guy in line? Who's the second guy in line? Usually it's defined. But now we're seeing all of a sudden these bullpens like the Mets and the Giants and the Phillies and the Astros. And where we're seeing a trend now, when you're talking about four or five teams doing it, then it becomes a trend. Sometimes you ask, you say, hey, Scott, you know, can this come in a trend around the league? When one team's doing it, I don't think so. Like with Tampa Bay, you know, that really hasn't caught on. All Seattle toyed with it. But, you know, when you're talking about four or five teams just playing the matchups, you know, now we're seeing sort of something of a trend around the majors where it's going to drive people crazy. And if this thing continues, the premium closers are going to go for even higher in auctions next year.
Yeah, that's a great point, Scott. You know, you talk about how, like, the only analogy I'll make is right now when you look at running back in football, right, how there's only, like, those premium studs that are workhorses that get a huge share. And then when you look at, to me, I don't know, Scott, roughly, let's say, you know, 9 teams, right, that have that kind of workhorse running back. The rest of them, they are all kind of committees on some level. We're not at that point just yet, Scott, but I think you make a good point. If this growing trend continues, there may only be a few kind of like elite closers, and then more and more teams maybe trying to piece it together based on matchups, based on who's hot. If this trend continues, might there only be like 10, you know, elite kind of closers that are worth it, and everyone else trying to piece it together, especially if you're not a contending team, Scott? Maybe you don't want to spend the money on what a kind of big time closer would command if you're not contending anyway, right?
I think are you saying only 10 elite closers or 10 reliable closers?
Well, I'm just saying if the trend continues, we could get to a place where there is only 10 closer situations that are very easily defined.
I think that's overrating it. I think you're talking about 5 out of maybe, you know, the entire league right now.
Yeah, but
Scott. No, but then you're talking about 2/3 of the league doing it then. I can't see it become that drastic.
Okay.
Well, over a short period of time. And by the way, you just got into another pet peeve of mine.
What's that?
Remember we talked about fantasy rotations and there's no such thing.
Yeah.
A lot of times people will say running back by committee when there's two guys sharing it.
No, that's the time.
You ever been on a two-person committee? Yeah.
Exactly. No, I got you. Timeshare.
What I tell my
two.
Riders. Yeah.
Timeshare is 2, 3+ is committee. But listen, Scott, honestly, there are some of these closer situations that are a committee at this point in time. You know, I mean, honestly, Houston, Davinsky has some saves as well. You know, I mean, there are some that are more than 2, but I absolutely understand.
They're definitely a committee. You know, there definitely are a few committees. To give it a quick rundown. To answer your question, if you'll so indulge me, okay?
Sure.
All right, here's the guys that are locked. Kimbrel, Jansen, Chapman, Diaz, Doolittle, Trinan.
Allen?
Let's see. Cody Allen. Wade Davis when he's healthy, Corey Knable, Felipe Vasquez. Maybe Arizona could go to a committee. Rossiel Iglesias is locked in. So already I'm at 14 guys already that, you know, pretty much. I realize Vince Caino. So you're talking about 15 teams already that pretty much have a defined role.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll just see. You know, I'm not talking about right now, Scott. I'm talking about maybe if this, because you talked about it as a potential trend, right? And so if it is a trend, then it's something to keep an
minor
eye on
trend.
To get growing and growing. Let's see if the trend
continues. It's a minor trend. I could see maybe one-third of the teams in the league doing it. That's too much.
All right, fair enough. We'll see what the impact is next year as you're drafting with this being the case. We do have to look, though, at the New York Yankees. They have a huge comeback victory yesterday, Scott. Gary Sanchez with his 14th home run. And Mike Stanton hits his 18th. You know, Scott, I never figured out why people don't use this catchphrase of mine. They always say walk-off home runs and stuff like that. You know, yesterday, actually, Stanton hit what was called for me a, quote-unquote, a go-homer. Why do people never use that terminology? It's a go-homer. He sent all the Yankees home happy. It's an 18th home run of the year. You know what, Scott? People are saying that Stanton was, like, struggling early on. Do you know right now, though, he's on pace for 41 homers, 96 ribbies, and 100 runs scored, albeit he's also on pace for 220 strikeouts this season, which is ridiculous. This coming from Buster Olney. But I guess my question for you, if you're on pace for 41, 96 ribbies, and 100 runs, are you actually struggling? Do you think Stanton's underperforming?
No, it's just he was underperforming early, and it became a narrative. You know, in April, he had 218 with three homers. Then 264 in May with six homers, 14 RBIs. That's not bad. 286 with seven homers, 13 RBIs. That's good. So he went from bad to mediocre to good. And the last 7 days, 346, three home runs, seven RBIs. The last 15 days, 286, 5 and 10. So overall, 255, 18 and 42. You know, you look at the overall numbers, you know, he's not really struggling. You know, you look at Stanton in his career, and he's a 267 hitter. You know, he had 240 in 2016. So 255 is not bad. I think at this point, Giancarlo Stanton has surged enough recently to where he's where we expect him to be. Now, in fantasy, if the perception is still out there that he's not living up to expectations, maybe you should go out and get the sense of how people feel about Giancarlo Stanton owners. Get the sense of the Giancarlo Stanton owner in your league and see how he feels about him. I just think the expectations were so outrageous. Mm-hmm. And just to be good is not good enough when you're talking about expectations in the Bronx.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, Stanton also coming off a year where he had 59 home runs, Scott, so everyone thought that he would automatically be able to kind of duplicate that, which I think is a little bit, like you said, the expectations get a little crazy, especially bright lights, big city.
Well, you know, I will say this, though. You know, he actually stayed healthy for the first time last year, and 145 games in 2014, he had 37, but he's still on pace with 40. You know, I'll take that kind of disappointment anytime. I remember the first year that Mike Piazza came to the Mets, and he got off to a terrible start, too, in his first month, and everybody's like, why did they make this trade? You know, it's all of a sudden, you know, people are so reactionary in New York, not just the fans, but the media, too. It's like, you know, either one of the teams wins three straight up, turning around, they're hot. Right. They lose three straight up, everything's falling apart. It's almost like a football-type reaction every night. And I think the media are guilty of it just as much.
Yeah, absolutely. That is what creates the pressure. You mentioned Mike Piazza, another example from days gone by in the past. I remember the beginning of when Tino Martinez came here for the Yankees to kind of replace Mattingly. Started off slow, and everyone was booing him, and then he wound up doing just fine. Constantino
I've heard them boo Jeter.
Yeah.
I've heard Yankee fans boo Jeter. You know,
so it is
you know, there's very high standards on either side of town. I think there's more frustration in Queens than anything, over the past 20-something years or whatever. But what is the media? The media is the link between the fans and the team. And the media, you know, no matter what you want to say, you know, those guys are, you know, they're professional fan representatives. That's what they are.
Absolutely. Let's keep it moving, though. Outside of New York, we are a national show, Scotty. The Cleveland Indians.
Sorry, I had to get that rant off my chest.
It's all good, brother, man. Just remember it next time you hear me talking about the Yankees. Next up, the Cleveland Indians put up a 12 spot. Okay, they do big things. That offense is humming. I've been telling you guys for a while, I think the Indians are going to start to pull away, getting fat off the dregs of this division, beating the Chicagos and the Kansas Cities of the like. Corey Kluber goes to 11-3. On the season, 7 scoreless innings. He strikes out 7 as well. I want to ask you, though, listen, you know, I want to ask you about Jason Kipnis, Scotty. I mean, he gets 3 RBIs yesterday. He goes yard, his 6th of the year. I know he's been one of these guys that have been scuffling as of late, you know, all season long, I guess. He's hitting .208. Are there any indicators, any reasons to start to believe that he may, you know, start to pull it up, a la, say, Paul Goldschmidt, who, you know,
Let's not get crazy now.
Okay, well, that's what I'm asking.
I'll never mention those two guys in the same sentence ever.
Fair enough, but I guess the question is, some of these guys who were scuffling for the first couple months of the season are starting to heat up. My question is, if you're a Kipnis owner, can you have some hope that this will happen for him? If you think that Kipnis owner is a mark in your league, should you start to maybe try to buy low on a guy like Jason Kipnis? The Indians are starting to produce and run away with that lineup. What do you think about this, Scott?
First off, about beating the White Sox, you know, they're 7-0 against them, I think, this year. But that's what good teams do. You beat the teams you're supposed to beat in any sport. It's like any people in the NFL say, they only beat such, such, and such, and such. Like, that's who they're supposed to beat. I don't want to hear it. Now, as far as Kipnis goes, you know, he had a great spring training. You know, I had spoken to somebody, a scout in the NL Central, AL Central, and said, this guy's primed to have a big year. He's pissed off that they tried to trade him during the offseason. And guess what? He was so pissed off that he had 160 in the first month and 221 in the second month. Now, he's only in the 241 this month, and I cut Jason Kipnis in my NFFC league. You know, maybe it's time to pick him back up because I think he's a free agent out there in a lot of leagues. That's about where I'll leave it. Last week, he's hitting .316 with 2 home runs and 5 RBIs, and he's starting to show signs, but it's got to be sustainable. You know, if all of a sudden the next week he goes back to hitting .220, you don't want him in your lineup. So, I look, it's good to see the signs, and I would pick him back up if he's a free agent and maybe even consider putting him back in your lineup in a 15-team league, but I'm not quite sold yet.
All right, so, you know, maybe trending in a good direction, but we're still going to wait and see when it comes to Kipnis. Hey, Scotty, an interesting game that I have a couple angles on. San Francisco Giants at home. They beat the Marlins 6-5. Listen, Brandon Belt with a good game. He's up over 300, hitting .305. Yep. Remember, we talked about him as a quality kind of, you know, corner infielder for some leagues. We talked about Jason Kipnis. Listen, Hunter Pence is on a similar potentially trajectory. He's still on the interstate, Scotty, hitting .195, but he had a good game yesterday. He goes 2-for-4, you know, bangs out a couple of ribbies. But well, here's what I want to ask you about. Listen, the Giants have the lead in the 9th. They bring in Sam Dyson, remember, who's supposed to be their new closer. He gets lit up, gives up 2 runs, and then they bring in Maronta. Scott, what do we think is going on here in the back end in San Francisco?
Oh, we don't know, really. It's, you know, Dyson got the shot. He had 14 saves last year. And, you know, he was pitching well this year, and he blew it immediately. Yep. So, you know, Yaronta might be the guy. It could be Tony Watson. It could be Mark Melanson. It was just what I was talking about before here. It's, you know, we don't know who the closer is going to be. And, you know, do they really give a hoot in San Francisco? I mean, this team is not in the race, and they just lost their closer. I think sometimes, like we saw in Toronto, this thing has to play out right now in front of our eyes. And, you know, and until somebody walks away with the job and shows that they can do it on a, like for 2-3 nights in a row, I don't think we're going to know who it is.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, especially for owners, say, let's say in a roto league where you need saves and you got to try to get ahead of the curve. You know what I mean? You're really kind of speculating, and it's really like a shell game, a little 3-card Monty. But keep your eyes locked to George Kurtz's articles on Roto Experts. 3card.com. What's up? You like 3card Monty? You don't remember 3card Monty back in the
Of course I do.
Of course you do.
Of course I do. The 3card Monty is a signal of the old Times Square. And you know, the old New York. You don't see it anymore. You know, the guy with the box.
Yeah, the cards moving Monty. Around.
I never played 3card Monty once in my entire
it's
life
because
I knew it was a complete scam. Just it was fascinating to watch to see the tourists that would get ripped off though.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a sucker bet. Hey, let me ask you about another game here, Scotty. Toronto Blue Jays, they get a W at home, 5-4 against the Atlanta Braves. J.A. Happ goes to 9-3 on the season. He goes 8 1/3, okay? He was pitching well, and then when Tapera let kind of the inherited runner's score, it ballooned to 4 earned runs for J.A. Happ. Listen, we kind of talk about people like DeGrom and Syndergaard and Madison Bumgarner and stuff like that, but is J.A. Happ like – in all likelihood going to be the actual best pitcher that kind of moves at the deadline, reports that maybe the Mariners are interested in J.A. Happ. Do you think he's kind of like the pitcher that may actually move, and these Madison Bumgarners and Jacob DeGroms are really pipe dreams of contending teams?
That's a good point. You know, right now, 9-3 with a 3.56 ERA and a 1.03 whip. He has given up four runs in two of his four starts this month. And three starts in the past 2 months. So Happ is the kind of guy that, you know, once in a while he'll strike out a decent amount of guys. We saw him do 8 twice this month, but then 4 or 3. It's you know, he's a good starter. You know, he's okay. He's always gonna keep his team in the game. He's not gonna dominate opponents, but he's be very, very serviceable and can really help any contender. You know, I could see him end up on the Yankees. I could see him, you know, ending up on the Mariners, you know, somewhere like that, a team that is looking for another solid starting pitcher. Yeah, it's definitely a picture of the trade market. You know, there's not any illustrious superstar starters out there that, you know, make it dealt, but you never know. You know, it's, all of a sudden, you know, we might see some move that we just don't see coming. And,
right.
A starter that we didn't expect to get moved all of a sudden happens.
Yeah, I was hypothesizing with Frank Stanfill the other day. Who are some of the off-the-radar arms that you never free? We didn't have any attractive options. You know, we were coming up with pipe dreams, guys like John Gray and stuff like that, but who knows? But, you know, there's always a surprise.
John Gray maybe could benefit from a change of scenery.
Yeah, you know, if the Rockies fall out, he's still a young power arm. He's got good stuff. Yeah, it's a young power arm if he ever got out of Colorado. Who knows? You know, Tyson Ross, maybe? Yep, we were definitely speculating, so I know we don't need to do that. But, you know, it's just
Did you guys mention Tyson Ross?
We did mention Tyson Ross as another kind of
option. I think he'd be a
there.
Nice pickup. He's, you know, they're talking about on Daily Roto this morning. They like him tonight. We'll talk to Mike Leone, but you know, right now, it's like he's averaging 8 strikeouts a game against right-handed hitters. So, you know, this is somebody maybe that, you know, could be on the market maybe for a move, maybe somebody who you don't necessarily expect who might get moved. I doubt the Rays would move Blake Snell.
Well, Archer has always been talked about.
Not in contention.
Archer's been talked about for a while. So,
we've never mentioned Snell.
This is true. We got to see these times.
Could Dylan Bundy get moved?
It's possible. Teams are going to have to start looking at themselves in the mirror and deciding what is best for their team long term. Hey, Scott, talking about Dylan Bundy, the one last game I want to get at before the break here, I need your help. You know, like Law and Order, we need the doom-doom. Help me with this. The Baltimore Orioles.
I never watched Law and Order.
Fair enough. The Baltimore Orioles beat the Nationals yesterday 3-0, okay?
Finally beat the Nationals.
And here's my thing, though, Scott. You know, on a team of mine, I am kind of waiting out this Baltimore closer situation. So I have Britton and Brock on my roster. They both come in. Why did Brock not get a save? Credit to him yesterday. They were winning 3-0. Okay, Britton comes in like the 8th. He gets the first out in the 9th. Brad Brock then comes in to get the final 2 outs. Doesn't give up any runs. It's a 3-0 win, so it's a save situation. But yet Brock is not credited with a save. I have no idea why that is the case. Scott, I know you may not know right off the bat. We got to investigate this. Maybe ask Mike Leone.
I don't know if you don't. It was 3-0 and there's no runners on base, then it's not a save. If, you know, in order for
three runs is not a save?
No, you have to have the tying run on deck in order for it to be a save.
Okay. I always thought it was a three-run gap because I see 4-1.
I'm going to check this. It's not about the amount of runs. It's also the situation.
Fair enough.
I'm going to check that. But that
let's
that,
check that out.
That's always been my understanding. The tying run has to be on deck.
Okay, we'll double check that because I was pissed off.
Okay,
when I saw
he,
that.
He enters a game with no lead, no more than three runs, and pitches for at least one innings.
No
he
more
enters
than
the game,
three
regardless
runs.
Of the score, with the potential tying run either on base at bat or on deck.
Right, but you said what was the first clause of that? With
he enters
three
the game
more
with
runs?
A lead of no more than three runs.
No more than three runs. He entered the game with a lead of three runs. That's not
but
more
he also
than three
had,
runs.
He also has to have the. He also has to have the tying run on deck.
It's both? Or is it an and situation or an
it's
or
both.
Situation? All right, fair enough, fair enough. Hey, Scotty, we got to take a break coming up soon, but I got to tell you, Odubel Herrera continues to be hot. He hit a home run in his fourth straight game. When we come back, Scotty, we are going to have Mike Leone with us. I'm going to ask him, among other things, how quickly do the pricing formulas react to something like this? Odubel Herrera, four games in a row, has hit home runs. Is he representing a value, or does the price catch up to him that quickly? We're off and running. It's Dane and Scott, Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
It takes two to make a thing go right. Hey, hey, it takes two to make it out of sight. Scott,
no,
missed your cue.
Three,
you're supposed to go,
though.
Woo! Hey, okay. That was your cue. Yeah.
Okay.
Yo, I want to rock right now. That's what we're doing here on Roto Experts in the Morning. It does take two to make a thing go right, and the two that you have are the spitting statistician and the king, Scott Angle. If you want to make it three, holler at us at 844-843-6879. We're investigating the save potential situation out there in Baltimore yesterday. Maybe the official scorer was playing against Brad Brock on his head-to-head fantasy league.
Are we
and
talking
he just didn't
about
want to
last
award
night's
it.
Game?
Yeah.
Talking about last night's game, right?
Baltimore Orioles over the Nationals, 3-0. Gio got the loss last night. Absolutely. Okay. That's what we're talking about. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. But in the meantime, Scott, there was also maybe some bumps and bruises. You want to give us a little bit of an injury brief here? What was going on last night? What your fantasy owners know in terms of the infirmary unit?
Yeah, Jose Martinez was... ...as day-to-day. For right now, we'll have to wait and see on that one. Some other injuries from around the majors. Here you go. Just having a little bit of technical difficulties right now. Okay, here I got it. Brandon Morrow went on the DL with a back injury. Pedro Stroper probably be the first guy to close while he's out. Don't know if he's going to spend the entire days, 10 days or not. Michael Wacha could be headed for the DL. He's got an oblique problem. Only 3 2/3 innings last night. Frenchy Cordero is going to go under elbow surgery. That could mean the end of his season. Marcus Stroman is finally set to return from the DL on Sunday as he comes back from a shoulder injury. Chris Taylor may return this Friday. Brett Gardner has missed four straight games with a knee injury. Alan Hansen is day-to-day with a knee contusion. And Chris Davis is day-to-day with a stomach bug.
All right, the stomach bug getting everybody. We're holding now. We hope to be joined a little bit later on by Mike Leone over there from Daily Roto. But in the meantime, let's start to look here, Scott. Tonight, as I look at the slate, it's a Max Scherzer day. You know, it's a Max Scherzer day. Outside of that, you got your guy Tyson Ross that we're talking about. Carlos Martinez is out there. Listen, Mad Bum also out there, but I don't think he's really performed up to warrant the price that he's probably going to have in his kind of two starts from the DL. As we look at these pitchers, you know, are you going to pay all the way up for Scherzer, or are you going to try to cheat the price with a guy like Cool or Godley or Ross?
I'm probably going to look to cheat with Ross.
We were talking about Ross.
I really like his matchup tonight at San Francisco, like they talk about on Daily Roto, in a pitcher's park. You know, like him a lot. And as they note on Daily Roto, you know, he strikes out 8 a game against right-handed batters. So I definitely like that matchup for him.
Yeah, that is a good matchup. Let me ask you this, Scott. I was going to ask Mike also. You know, I mentioned before we went to the break that Odubel Herrera now has homered in 4 straight games, right? How quickly do these formulas adjust to hot streaks and cold streaks? You know, like when we talked about Goldschmidt, his price started skyrocketing up last month. You know, where is kind of the opportunity there for someone that's riding kind of a hot streak? Remember, we also talk, Scott, about guys like Justin Upton, who when they start getting hot, we know that they can carry a team and really, you know, put up big numbers for big stretches a week or two at a time. How quickly, generally speaking, in your opinion, do these kind of algorithms and formulas catch up to the right pricing in these kind of situations with hot streaks?
I don't know if you can quote me on that. I think it's within a few days, but I don't know the exact number. I don't want to misinform anybody, to be honest with you.
All right, fair enough. Maybe that's something we talk about.
My general feeling is that, you know, that catches up within a few days, mm-hmm. you know, from what I watch when I'm playing. But I don't know what the exact rule is. And, you know, I don't want to quote that when I may not be the most accurate on the source of that.
I buy it. Listen, the King, Scott Angle, wants to be very, very, you know, specific. When we talk to the fans here, we can't let someone be misinformed. I completely agree.
I'm looking at this ninth inning from,
Go ahead.
From the Nationals. Yes,
we're investigating.
So Britton comes out, right?
Right.
Michael Taylor singles, and then Turner singles. And yeah. and then Goodwin walked. So he had the bases loaded. So what I think is I think it might fall under the rule that and I'm not 100% accurate here. I am speculating, so that anybody
That's
knows, 844-843-6879.
Hit us up.
What I'm saying is that it kind of falls under that he kind of pitched himself into a save situation, and a pitcher can't pitch himself into a save situation.
I guess, but the ninth inning started with that 3-run lead. You know, and to be quite honest, wasn't it Britton that started that inning?
Yes.
And didn't Britton kind of get into the trouble? Like, there was already issues.
It was Brock.
So Britton got
Brock.
The first
Brock
out?
Came in, gave up 2 singles and a walk.
So he kind of pitched himself into a jam and then got out of it. And so,
yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm still pissed off. I think if when I look up and I see 3-0 Orioles win and I know that I have Britton and Brock, I'm expecting a save out of that. You know what I mean? So that is a very interesting kind of thing. Listen, another piece that I was going to ask you, you mentioned to me when we talk about Daily Fantasy, how they have some of these new games out there, right? The Home Run Challenge, for example. Let's talk about that a little bit. Do you have any kind of tricks of the trade there? I mean, it's kind of like we play Roto Clio. You know, we play Roto Clio almost every day here and decide to pick, like, who's going to go yard today. What else are you thinking about? What are the factors that you're thinking about? Are you thinking about lefty versus righty? Are you thinking about the ballpark? Are you just looking at ISO and the fly ball rate of the pitcher to try to make that kind of call? I know, you know, when you were making your Roto Clio picks, you like the stolen base sometimes. But if we were picking just exclusively home runs, what are the indicators that you would be looking for, Scott?
In what sort of game?
In this FanDuel, and this new FanDuel game, you know what I mean? Like just the home run challenge where you just like pick 3 players. That's what in that game. That's what I'm asking about.
Yeah, I think you always got to look at platoon splits and ballparks, etc. You know, those are probably, and you know, you want to look at a guy's isolated power, and also you want to you know, look at a pitcher's tendency to give up fly balls as well. You know, Matt Cook, who was sent to the minor leagues last night, you know, if I got a guy who's got a platoon split in a good ballpark against Matt Cook, you know, I'm locked in.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so those are some of the things you look for. Because here at Roto Experts, in the morning, we do not try to just give you a fish. We try to teach you how to fish. Right now, as I check in on the poll, Scotty,
I found the loophole.
Oh,
Brad Brock.
You found the loophole. He's all right, tell me that.
He's got to pitch at least one or more innings with a lead of three or more. He pitched two-thirds of an inning.
But Scotty, I have definitely seen one out saves before in the major leagues. That's definitely
because the tying run is on deck, because the guy will come in with the tying run on deck or on base and then get the out. He pitched two thirds of an inning.
Yeah,
it says he's got to pitch. He's in a specific circumstances. He's got to be the last pitcher in the game. Check, right?
Yeah.
His team wins the game. Check.
Yeah.
And one of the following: he pitches one or more innings with a lead of three or more. He didn't. He pitches three innings. He didn't. He comes into the game with a tying run on deck. He didn't. So he doesn't qualify.
All right. I don't know that I am convinced.
How can
angry
I not
about
convince
it.
You? That's I just laid it out for you in black and white.
All right. Fair enough. Let's get Mike Leone here involved to see what he has to say about this and more things all involving daily fantasy. We welcome now in Mike Leone from dailyroto.com here on the Roto Experts in the morning. Good morning, Mike. It's bright and early. Thanks for doing the 7:30 spot for us. Hit that snooze bar. Thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes, Mike.
Yeah, of course, Dane. Thanks for having me on.
Fair enough. Listen, I don't know. Can you help us out here? I'm a little bit pissed off, okay? I have been holding on to the entire Baltimore Orioles closer situation for a while. So right now I have Britton and Brock on my roster. And I look up to, you know, prep for this morning's show. I see the Orioles got a 3-0 win, you know, and neither one of them got a save. Brock finished the game, pitched the last two outs of the ninth. It's a 3-run or less lead. He had runners on base and all this stuff, yet no one from the Orioles was credited with a save. Scott is investigating why that is. I mean, I've seen one out saves before.
I found the solution already.
I mean, I don't know. Leone, you got anything to add on this? I mean, Scott thinks he's found the answer. I'm a little bit skeptical. What did you know? Can you give us any insight here?
I think, isn't it something like you have to have faced at least the amount of batters that would have been needed to tie the game or something like that?
Actually, what it is you got to pitch at least one inning with three or more, with a lead of three runs or less, which Brock did not do. And you at least have to have the tying run on deck when you come into the game, and he didn't have that
the
either.
The tying run on deck.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But I did think if it was like three or less, you were usually okay, but...
Well, yeah,
I've seen one out.
You have to pitch a full inning in order for that to happen. He pitched two-thirds of an inning.
Oh, man. That's a tough one, Dane.
It is. Thank you for at least empathizing with me, Mike Leone. But that's all right. Let's spin it forward. Another thing I was asking Scotty real quick here. And
I hope
then,
you don't lose your league by one save.
I really don't, because saves is the category. Listen, Scotty, I'm telling you, saves is the category that I'm trying to do work in. I am tied for first place in Roto, and I only have 4 points in the save category, right? So that's where I'm going to make my hay and get my working margin. I told you already, I'm looking to try to trade Stripling for Bud Norris, for God's sake. Just because I'm killing it in quality starts, I'm killing it and I'm over my innings pitch kind of pace.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but I'm over my innings pitch kind of pace, man.
But
I
wouldn't trade
it
for Norris.
I
wouldn't trade it for Norris.
Listen, I hear you, but who else am I going to trade? I have DeGrom, Bauer, Clevenger, Foltynewicz. You know, I'm not trading any of these guys, but I digress.
Trading for a better closer than that, though. Norris is a little bit on shaky ground.
I understand, but I have to
target
the team.
Just name drop your whole rotation there.
Listen, I got to target the whole team. I got to do a lot of work, but no one wants to hear about the Trevor ending story, my first place team. Let's keep it moving. Hey, Mike, let me ask you something here. I was asking Scott real quick about Odubel Herrera. The dude has hit a home run in four straight games, right? So the question for you, Mike, is how quickly do they adjust these prices? How quickly do these formulas and algorithms really respond to guys who get hot? Scott and I also talk about guys like Justin Upton, who when they get hot, they get really hot. Is there an opportunity there when you sense a hot streak coming on?
Yeah, so the one thing that's very difficult in DFS is discerning between hot streak and just like small sample noise, and it's one of, you know, up there with BVP is one of like the kind of the controversial things to look at. For me, I try not to look at just the surface statistics. Obviously, four home runs is pretty impressive, but I'm trying to look at, you know, is the plate discipline figures good? Are they, you know, is their walk to strikeout ratio strong, which helps indicate if they're seeing the ball well? Is their hard hit rate recently good? And on Daily Roto, we've got a 15-day hard hit rate and a seasonal hard hit rate. So it's kind of cool to be able to compare those two together. So those are the types of things I'm looking at. As far as the pricing goes, I feel like on FanDuel, they adjust a bit faster on the hitter side to the recent performance in the hot streaks, whereas on DraftKings, it's more of a set algorithm based on the player's like longer-term skill. DraftKings will, and then when it's someone who first gets called up, it's kind of like the opposite, where I feel like it corrects a little bit quicker on DraftKings than it does on FanDuel. So sometimes between the two sites, you can buy low on FanDuel on a guy in a hot streak, but then on DK, sort of let the other people pay for the hot streak, whereas we're more grounded in the long-term skill level, is that's basically the center of everything that we're trying to do.
Do those salaries, though, like how often did they adjust them, though? My feeling was every few days, and you went so much deeper on the home run thing. For me, it was like, you know, platoon splits, isolated power, and, you know, ballparks, and, you know, guys who give up a lot of homers like Kuchar, Hamels, but you dug even deeper than that, which I love. But did they adjust it every few days?
Yeah, I mean, the prices are always moving on guys. They're constantly moving. There might be a little bit of a gap where they've done the pricing already for the next day, and, you know, the night before hasn't been completed yet. So you might get like a 1 to 2 day gap there, but they're constantly updating the pricing algorithm on guys. And like DraftKings now takes into account the matchup when they're doing the pricing. Even on FanDuel a little bit, you'll see the Coors Field guys priced up somewhat. So it's definitely harder now to find those obvious mispricings that you used to find in the past.
Got a question, Scotty, or you want me to go?
Oh, I thought it was your turn.
No problem, because it's all good. It's all good. Here's what I want to ask you. You know, Mike, with now, you know, the repeal of the federal ban on sports gambling, you know, states can kind of make their own decisions. You know, I think there's going to be – I saw things coming from Nando DeFino, who was at the FSTA conference, about all these kind of stats correlating fantasy players to kind of becoming likely sports bettors, things like that. I look at FanDuel, and this year I've also seen, as Scott mentioned, the new kind of like home run contest where you have to pick three guys, and you talked about some of the things you look for there. There's also another game, Mike, that I wanted to ask you about where you pick only five players, but one of them is like a multiplier, right, of like 1.5x or 2x. Tell me a little bit about the strategy for that game. Is that, you know, should I be playing that game, or is that a sucker bet? Like when I go to the casino and I sit down at the blackjack table, and then there's also that thing where I could like match the dealer, you know, or something else, you know, one of those kind of other, I think those are sucker bets. What about this format where there's the multiplier? Is this something I can kind of get ahead of the field on? What's the strategy with that kind of format, Mike?
Yeah, so admittedly, I don't play that format as much, but I don't think that it's a sucker bet for the reasoning because, you know, a lot of people like me who are more experienced DFS players, we're playing the standard games where the prize pools are a bit larger. So I think the competition that you're going up against isn't going to be as strong. And I really like that FanDuel is coming out with these types of games. Now, the thing that worries me a little bit is I don't like the focus on the single game stuff quite as much, where there's a little bit more randomness. Like I get it when we've got an isolated Sunday night baseball game, that makes sense to me, but I don't, you know, on a regular slate, I don't like the emphasis on that when we can, you know, it does diminish the skill a little bit just because you're going to get overlapping lineups and whatnot when it's just a single game. But in general, I like that they're trying these new game formats because I think for the future of the DFS industry, especially with sports wagering coming along and you want to hold everyone's attention, you want these games that are a little bit simpler to play, that are tailored to casual players, where they're not going up against sharks night in and night out. So I do like these types of games. I know I've kind of not answered your question as far as the strategy to it, though, but I do think there's probably
an edge. As I said, I haven't played these games too much personally myself. But as far as the 1.5x player, like, we have projections on dailyroto.com, and I think you can use those to your advantage. But the big thing we like to look at, even just for regular DFS, you're not getting 1.5x, is these guys are going to get a lot of plate appearances, because opportunity, people don't look at DFS in terms of opportunity, because they just think, oh, guy's in the lineup, he's only going to get 3 or 4 plate appearances. But we found, if you look at the implied run total, if you look at the home away, if you look at the batting order, you can start to discern the amount of opportunity a player is going to get. And the difference between like 5 plate appearances and 4 plate appearances is huge over time. It might not seem like it, because 1 plate appearance, it's so easy for a guy to get out. But over time, you know, that's a 25% increase in the number of opportunities that you're going to get to put up points. So that's something to keep in mind.
So if you go to dailyroto.com this morning, you have your rundown, which you guys put out very early in the a.m. Every morning. You talk about pitching, as always, and you talk about how Madison Bumgarner is priced less on DraftKings, making him more attractive. But do you feel like he's 100% worth the price?
Yeah, so it's actually, I think it's FanDuel, he's a little bit less on relatively than to DraftKings, or at least that's what he meant to say. Whether he's worth the price or not, I don't think he's 100%. If you look at his underlying statistics, it's not there. But what's good to see is he is starting to face more batters. He's consistently pitching 6 innings. And the weird thing about tonight is, whether or not you think he's 100%, he's facing the San Diego Padres, which is just an elite matchup for all starting pitchers. It's home in his park, which is a great pitcher's park. It's one of the lowest implied run totals against, at 3.4. And on FanDuel, when you're looking for an alternative to Max Scherzer on a slate for tournaments, like, you have to play Max Scherzer in your cash games as long as rain's not an issue. In tournaments, it's even hard to get off of him, because he just projects so much better than everyone else. So I think if you're getting off of him, you need someone with some semblance of a ceiling that can at least come close to Max, and then you can beat the Max Scherzer teams with a better lineup. And the two guys that could do that are Bumgarner and Tyler Skaggs on this slate. So I think that's where he's most useful, in a situation where you want a GPP pivot off of Scherzer on FanDuel specifically.
Hey, fair enough. We're talking with Mike Leone here out of DailyRoto.com. They make millionaires, including last week at the U.S. Open for the PGA. It was, in fact, the Daily Roto guy that helped split the millionaire maker. So you definitely want to go on over to DailyRoto.com for all the insight. Speaking of multiple sports, Mike, you know, you're like a Brian Jordan, like a Deion Sanders, like a Bo Jackson. I hear that you have some content coming out in the exclusive Edge Roto Experts Fantasy Football package that is dropping over the course of the next couple of days. I've been talking with Jake Seely in the next hour about zero RB theory, and I hear you have some thoughts on that in the package. Without kind of going too far behind the curtain, tell me why or what needs to happen in the NFL in any given year for this to be a good strategy. Do you need all the first round running backs to get hurt, in essence? Or tell me a little bit about zero RB.
Well, one, I was talking with Drew last night about Brian Jordan and Deion Sanders multi-sport. Yeah. So, like, the chances that would come up in less than a 24-hour span is pretty funny. But two, going to the zero RB, I wrote an article for the draft package on both zero RB and zero wide receiver strategies. And what I found looking at the data is there's not a huge edge, in my opinion, in either one of these strategies in terms of, like, a market inefficiency where guys are being drafted. We did see this huge outlier year in 2015 that was great for zero RB for a combination of reasons. One, a lot of the top RBs got hurt. You had a lot of platoon situations. There was no huge RB one that you just absolutely had to get. And then two, the wide receivers were garnering more and more targets. Now it's a little bit tougher because we've seen somewhat of a resurgence of the workhorse running back to a degree. We've also seen teams, they're just spreading out their targets a bit more, which makes it a bit tougher to get this elite upside in the wide receiver one. And part of the goal of the zero RB strategy is, you know, win the flex spot in a PPR type format. And it's tougher to win the flex spot like that when you're getting more spread out targets. So all that said, whether it's zero RB or zero wide receiver, one of the main points of my article was that I think if you really look at your league settings and you understand who you're drafting with, you can gain an edge with a strategy that can be very holistic and very, somewhat extreme. And people are afraid to do things like that, but it can be a lot of fun. It can be very rewarding. So in zero RB, if you're doing a really, and I like a hybrid zero RB because I'm never passing on David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, that elite running back in the top spot. But you're drafting, even past your filled-in starters at wide receiver to start your draft. And that's something that's very difficult for people to grasp. But the idea is to optimize your roster long-term, not just for week one. And you can do that also by the types of running backs you're drafting later in rounds. There's more of a specific reason to draft them, where sometimes in a lot of drafts, you're just doing the same thing as everyone else. You're drafting the running back that's highest on your list, whereas this is like, okay, I need to get my pass catching back to give me my floor. I need to give me my handcuff running back to give me my upside in case someone gets hurt. So I just really like both of these strategies, even though they're very different. Just because the idea that you can take this approach where everything is working together to create the best roster long term. So I get a little romantic about it.
Yeah, in this article, upcoming exclusive Edge package, rotoexperts.com, which is going to launch shortly, you talk about, if you're going to wait, you do a zero wide receiver sort of strategy, you could wait on those pass catching running backs, like a Kamara broke out last year. Are there any under the radar pass catching running backs you're liking this year?
So far, I'm not super prepped right now for as far as this specific strategy. What I'm looking to do, usually I try and jump in some best ball leagues middle of July, so I've kind of plotted out macro what I want to do, but I haven't pegged the specific guys yet for each spot that I want to do. But what's cool with these strategies is you have like archetypes of players that you want to draft, and I think you get away from just the simple, oh, this is where guys is ranked. And again, that's what everybody does, right? And it's very hard. There's been some research over time that says value-based drafting is kind of flawed and not the best way to do things, because you got 12 guys in the league. Everyone's working off a set of rankings that are somewhat similar, and everyone's just trying to take the best player available. To beat those guys consistently, to quote-unquote beat the rake, you have to be a lot better than them at that, and it's just difficult to be a lot better than them at it. So the way you get around that is by having a better strategy than them, and that's where zero RB, zero wide receiver comes in, where things are working together, and I think there are players like a Duke Johnson in a zero RB strategy that he's more valuable to a zero RB team than he is to another team. And you can find players like that that really fit in with your roster construction.
Fair enough. We'll be keeping an eye out for all your work and the exclusive Edge package coming out. Mike, we only got like 20 seconds real quick, though. Yesterday in Roto Clio, I picked Joey Gallo to hit a home run. He steals a base. Instead, I need a one-word answer, Mike. Who's going yard today? Help me out. Catch up to Jake.
I'll go Matt Olson. I'm worried the game can get rained out, though.
Nice. That was going to be my pick. That was going to be my pick. You're validating it for me. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us. Have a great day, Scott. The all-in kid, Jake Seeley, is back. When we come back, it's Roto Experts in the Morning.
Stay tuned to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network for more updates at the top of every hour. You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning. Dane Martinez gets the hot tag in from Jake Seeley. The all-in kid joins us now. Hey, Jake, I got to tell you something. We're going to dive into football. We're going to continue our AFC South previews. I think we're going to talk about the Houston Texans. We're going to break down our guy Nando DeFino's draft. But I got to tell you something. This is now getting a little bit ridiculous for me and Roto Clio. 2 days ago, I picked DJ LeMahieu. He's the only Colorado Rocky to not get a hit. Yesterday, Jake, I picked Joey Gallo to go yard. Joey Gallo steals a base and doesn't go yard. I mean, what do I got to do to get something correct here? I pick a guy who would have earned me 3 points. Like, you think Gallo's ever going to get a steal? No, you pick him to go yard and he steals a base. I think he's just putting it in my face now.
I don't know. There's a handful. You could have gone back to Arenado like I did the day before.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I could have done, but unfortunately, I did not. I got to tell you, though, Jake, if you didn't listen to the first hour, Mike Leone made the same pick as I have ready to go for a home run today. So I think I'm going to be catching up.
We'll see. I haven't seen that one. I got my home run in the last second.
Yeah, I know you did. But I also said to Scott in the first hour, listen, remember our poll question yesterday was Altuve or Stanton? It looks like they both were trying to maybe inspire the voters. Giancarlo with a quote-unquote go-homer for the New York Yankees. Altuve gets two yesterday. This matchup is also, I think, going to be pretty interesting. The two-seed Aaron Judge, the seven-seed Chris Bryant. I projected it with Scott to be about a 60-40 split for Aaron Judge, and right now it is exactly that. Do you think Judge wins this one, and do you think it's a runaway or a kind of one of the closer matchups we've seen in this round?
He shouldn't win this one. Look, Chris Bryant, a World Series winner. Chris Bryant is one of the best players in baseball all around. Judge has a ton of power. I love Judge. He's a great player, but this is going to get skewed because of the Yankees. If you're talking about who should be the face of baseball, it should be Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant has already been the face of baseball, recognizable because of his pretty blue eyes and all that stuff.
Look at that. One blue-eyed bombshell to another, trying to hype up another blue-eyed cat, Chris Bryant. But if you want to get on part of this, hey, if you want to be part of this, if you're outside New York and you want to move the needle here, holler at us, follow us at Spittin' Speeds, at the All In Kid, at Scott.
No, even if you're in New York and you don't want to be a homer.
Sure, if you're a Mets fan, for example, and you want to, like, put the Judge down, right? It won't be all rise, but we shall see as we move on to the semifinals, which will get started. And then we'll have our top four, and those matchups should be pretty good. Jake, you know, we are in that dead point of the football season, but before we get into our Houston Texans preview, I do want to bounce a couple of things off of you. Jake, one of the things I heard, Alan Hearns in Dallas is running as kind of like the clear number one wide receiver for Dallas. But I know, like, we don't necessarily like this wide receiver room altogether. Here's my question for you, for the Cowboys. And I should probably ask Corey Parson this. I'm going to see him a little bit later on today. Obviously, Zeke Elliott is a first-round pick, right? We get that. After Zeke Elliott, when is the next Cowboy being drafted in fantasy leagues? Is it like all the way to down to like round, I don't know, is it Dak? All the way down to like round 8 or 9 or 10? Is it Alan Hearns? Is it somewhere else? Like, that's a long time to not get another Cowboy. Who's the second Cowboy drafted in leagues, Jake?
It's usually Hearns and then sometimes Michael Gallup. Honestly, Dak Prescott's not even being drafted. I just did an 18-team draft and Dak Prescott didn't get drafted.
In an 18-team league, he didn't get drafted?
Yep.
Wow. That is crazy. Okay, so listen, and some
people
are high on Dak.
Why?
No, I am not high on Dak. I'm not high on Dak. I just think, let's say Dak is maybe a poor example, but it seems to me that every time we talk about another quarterback that's kind of surprising to me that they're in the kind of 12 to 15 range. And I'm like, wait, I could get this guy also if I wait all the time. I'm thinking about the Rivers and the Ryans and the Goffs and the Staffords and the Mahomes of the world. So when I hear just another name that at one point was kind of drafted inside the top 10, and last year people were all so high on Dak, I was not one of them. But it just, I think, adds more fuel to the fire that, you know, you can in fact wait on quarterback. No?
Well, that's the obvious part about it. This is why you wait on quarterback, and this is why you don't take one. I mean, unless the value is there. I said the same thing. If Carson Wentz is going to keep dropping to the ninth round, I'm going to keep taking Carson Wentz in the ninth round. I'm not going to wait just for the fact to wait on quarterback. But the proof is there. You could always keep, like, until we have this whole situation with who knows if he's playing week one, I was taking Jameis Winston in, like, the 13th round every single time.
Interesting. And later on, when we break down our guy Nando DeFino's draft, he might have been taking a cue from you because I think he wound up with a very similar quarterback situation to what you just described.
And then he's in trouble. Hey, we already have a goal, by the way, in the World Cup again.
Again? Let me see. Wait, what do we got? Denmark in just like the sixth minute or whatever. Denmark over Australia right now, 1-0. I hit a parlay yesterday on the World Cup, by the way. I'm continuing to make a little bit of cash over on mybookie.ag with the World Cup. Jake, by the way, have you seen the Fantasy Freestyle yet with the longest legs in the world? You got to go check it out, Jake.
No, I told you. Oh. Talk to me next week when I don't have this right. draft kit that we're trying to get out. It's like nice. Right. Yeah.
It's worth it. Even Mike Cardano tweeted it out a little bit. It was definitely good times, Fantasy Freestyle, early in the week. I recommend you watch it. Don't listen to it. All right, Jake, let's get into the Houston Texans. I mean, you know, I have some questions for you. My first question for you, I saw this, you know, kind of news and notes real quick before we really dive in. Kiki Kute, am I pronouncing that even right? Their fourth-round pick, they see him as potentially a slot guy over the likes of, obviously, Braxton Miller and others, over the likes of, say, Ellington as well. Tell me a little bit about this fourth-round draft pick, Kiki Kute, if I'm even pronouncing it right, and if there's any potential for him to be some kind of weapon out of the slot. The Texans don't have, say, like a C.J. Fedorowicz anymore at tight end, so could a third wide receiver be supported here in fantasy for Houston?
Yeah, so I think he was making a joke about that. His son pronounces his itchy cookie, and it's like, because nobody knows how to pronounce it. It's pronounced like QT. It's you're not QT. Even close. He pronounced it himself. He even said so. He clarified it himself at the beginning of last season. So it's QT.
So we'll go with it. Okay, we'll go with
just
QT.
Just picture a Q and a T. That's it. So,
yeah, I was thinking about a Q-tip. Technically myself, I was thinking about the Q-tips I need in my ears after the segment. But
so,
yes,
in any case, Kiki QT is actually that's what that skill set is. He actually can be a very good slot receiver for this team, and it's not surprising to me because Braxton Miller, you know, we still talk about the fact he was a transitioning wide receiver.
He's a converted quarterback, yeah.
And there's been talent that's flashed, but similar to Terrell Pryor and other players before him. It's very hard for a quarterback to transition to wide receiver and match, you know, or not match, but just provide all the facets of being a wide receiver that's necessary. And let alone, you know, maybe if we talked 5 years from now, but the fact is you know, you got to find also, it's one thing to say, hey, you're a red zone threat, and that's kind of it. And it's like, all right, well, that's acceptable. Or like, you're just a slot guy. The biggest problem is a lot of times these guys move from quarterback to wide receiver, like Terrell Pryor, like Braxton Miller, and they're kind of somewhat good at things, but they're not like there's not one skill set where they really outdo everybody else, and that's the problem. That's why Braxton Miller has some talent and he can work out of the slot, and he's shown some ability to work out of the slot. But QT
is a, come on, Jake, he pronounced it himself.
Is a great slot receiver, so he's got that edge over him. So this doesn't surprise me, but the fact is I'm not really interested in a third wide receiver for this team anyway, because it's Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is a better passing quarterback, well, more often passing quarterback than Cam Newton. Like the fact is he's not going to throw for 4,500 yards. You're not going to find a consistent third option on this team.
Right. We talk about, you know, we talk about all the time, what is the size of the passing pie, right? And the Houston pie, in terms of the passing attack, is not as big, so we don't want to slice it up too many ways. I hear you. And when you talk about this transitional from quarterback to wide receiver, you know, Jake, I have certain feelings about it. I'm sure I could talk to Emery Hunt about this because he says the same kind of thing. But I think it's hysterical that you just assume that these kind of quote-unquote dynamic athletes can just pick up the wide receiver position like that. You know, we're talking about being at a world-class level where less than 1% of the athletes in the world can actually be an NFL-caliber wide receiver. And then when you take a guy like, whether it's Braxton Miller, whether it's Terrell Pryor, you know, they suggested it out of absolutely nowhere with a guy like Lamar Jackson this, you know, in the run-up to the draft this year. It really, it frustrates me from a societal, if you get what I'm saying, kind of perspective, that they just automatically assume that these athletes can make this transition. This is a world-class level athlete. It is hard. There are people that are superstars at college that don't get a sniff in the NFL at wide receiver, and yet they just think that these kind of quote-unquote dynamic athletes can just all of a sudden switch and learn the position. It is not easy, Jake. I don't know why they try to force feed so many people into this, you know, even Lamar Jackson at the combine and stuff. So it's a challenge for me to just kind of accept that they can do that. You feel me?
No, you can make complete sense. The fact is, you got to consider how many people fail to make it to the NFL and then just say, like, hey, you should be able to do this. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I completely agree.
It's like
but
the
you
same
know,
thing with baseball. The same thing with like, oh, well, just move to first base.
Sure. Absolutely. We're just talking about, hey, you know, we want to get Adrian Gonzalez out of the lineup. Wait, maybe we can move Todd Frazier to first. Maybe we can move Jay Bruce to first.
Well,
you know, whatever
at least is. At least Frazier used to play first.
Has some experience, right. But it's almost like, think about Kyle Schwarber even. Like, oh, yeah, just throw him in the outfield. It'll be fine. You know, I mean, this is – we're talking about a world-class level here, and there are – thousands of people toiling, you know, trying to get to that, to just think that someone can kind of flip the switch and pick up the skill set that is necessary. You know, I remember, listen, Jake, I moved from shortstop to the outfield just going into college when I played at Syracuse, and I played center field and it was fine. Then I had to 1 year move to play left field, and like the tail on the ball curving towards the foul line was something that I had to learn. You know what I mean? It's just not something that you pick up right away. But I digress. Let's move on here, Jake. We're talking about the Houston Texans, and you talk about waiting on quarterback. I want to bring up the case of Deshaun Watson. Listen, I'm not going to have Deshaun Watson on many of my teams, Jake, because, listen, this supernova Halley Comet that happened for four games last year, don't get me wrong. I think Deshaun Watson is a supreme talent. I think he will be a, you know, good NFL quarterback this year and for the foreseeable future. I love the fact that he has the running ability as well. But as you know, Jake, I'm not going to go up and draft a quarterback. I think many people, someone in your league, is going to go ahead and take the chance on Deshaun Watson early. And also, listen, it was only four games. You know, don't you think, Jake, that on some level, this guy, you know, the league is going to adjust? You know, he didn't have that kind of adjustment period where the league figured him out a little bit and he had to adjust back. So I'm a little bit skeptical, you know, that he's just going to be able to come out and do the same exact thing again. Tell me about your thoughts on Deshaun. Do you agree with me that, like, the sample size was very small and someone's going to reach for him in your draft? So, I don't know, are you going to have shares of Deshaun Watson this year?
Yeah, we already talked about Deshaun Watson a few weeks ago, like I think it was 2 weeks ago. I keep saying the same thing. It's the former players will tell Embry will tell you this, players will tell you, analysts, everything. The second year for a quarterback is the toughest year for quarterbacks. It's just a fact because the NFL has some tape on you. The NFL knows what they need to do to stop you, and everybody's out to try and stop you. As soon as somebody figures out how to at least contain Deshaun Watson or limit him, it's, you know, copycat league, and everybody else is going to have the book on how to do it too. And that's just the fact. So that's why. If you look at it, Deshaun Watson, yes, he can overcome. It's not a guarantee that every second-year quarterback is not going to succeed. There's plenty that have. Some will take a step forward. And what my point was the other day, he said Carson Wentz and Jared Goff took step forwards, but they weren't coming off of what Deshaun Watson just did. You know, there wasn't like a book out there and like, oh, look how great this guy is playing. Let's figure out how to stop it. No, they were taking enormous steps forward because they really didn't do much the year before. So it's kind of two different things. But the fact is that you roll all that together, and when he's going as next to Aaron Rodgers off the draft board, it's just insane. He's not going to be on any of my teams.
Yeah, I agree. I guess my last question on that point, you talk about the second-year quarterback, right, and how there's that adjustment. Is that even a bigger deal in the case of Deshaun Watson? Because he didn't play a full season, Jake. He played like four or five games. Does that even add to that kind of case study for you?
Which part?
The fact that it wasn't like, say, Trubisky had pretty much a full year, right? So the league adjusts and stuff like that. I'm saying, is it even harder for a guy like Deshaun Watson because the sample size was so small in that first year?
I don't think that has anything to do with what his second year should be.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. Let's keep it moving here with the Houston Texans. Obviously, you know, someone's going to draft Deshaun Watson. Jake and I both think he's not going to be on too many of our teams. The rushing potential is definitely there, though. I see him being able to run for, I don't know, I would say maybe 450 kind of yards, another maybe 3-4 touchdowns on the ground as well. I don't need Jake to respond back because to get Jake's projections, you need to go to the Exclusive Edge, you know, fantasy football package, which will be dropping soon in the next couple of days. But Jake, I want to go to the running back room here for the Houston Texans. I think you've heard me say it a number of times. I don't know if you agree with me, but I think Lamar Miller is a complete fugazi, someone you need to forget about. He never lived up to the billing when they signed him, and I really believe that Dante Foreman provided the Achilles that he's come back, maybe not right away, but by the time the calendar hits, you know, Halloween, let's say, I truly believe there's a good chance that Foreman could be the lead back of this team. That is going to be my bold prediction. I actually would rather have Dante Foreman over Lamar Miller. I just think Lamar Miller is fugazi, Jake. Tell me I'm crazy.
You're not crazy, but, well, I mean, if you're going to call him fugazi this crazy, I definitely think he has value. I'll take him as my RB3. Heck, he might put up RB2 numbers again. This is the same thing. Like, I don't know how many times we have to say about Lamar Miller. Lamar Miller, everybody's complaining to get him more touches when he was with the Dolphins. He gets more touches, and he fails. But at the same time, let's go back to the Dolphins' touches when it was in those mid-teen range every single game. He was an RB1 two of those years. And I'm not saying he's going to be an RB1, but if he's still getting 14 to 18 touches every single week, while that might be fugazi for people that want him to be Lamar Miller, he's still going to end up being an RB2 in PPR especially. So, I don't want him, and there is a big risk, but Foreman's not even guaranteed to be ready for week one. Like, I don't know why everybody's just – this is an Achilles injury. You tell your Achilles, there's players that don't ever come back from those and they look like 100%. And people – this team has already come out and said – they don't know if he's ready for week one. And people are drafting him like he is. People are drafting him like he is what I said last year. And the fact that Foreman last year when drafted, I said could push Lamar Miller not into just the timeshare, but into the lower end of the timeshare with Foreman getting first and second down, short yards, goal line, all the major work. So he's more of the 60% guy and Lamar Miller was the 40% guy. That was my concern last year. It could still happen, but he has to be 100%. So I think right now, I would actually say the problem right now is Foreman's being drafted too high.
Right. Okay. So too many people are getting ahead of this narrative, maybe a little bit too much, and forgetting just how serious of an injury the Achilles is, especially obviously for a running back. That being said, Jake, and I'm speculating here, okay? And I acknowledge that. Could this be a potential landing spot for a guy like DeMarco Murray?
I mean, there's a lot of teams that could. I still think DeMarco Murray is waiting for a team that has an injury where he can be the lead option. He went to the Saints and didn't sign. There's obviously he wants to go somewhere where he still is at least, if not the lead, but going to get a decent amount of work every single week. So, no, I don't think Houston is that place.
No. All right, fair enough. Fair enough. Let's look at the wide receivers here, Jake, real quick. I mean, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, for a long time, DeAndre Hopkins has been one of my favorite wide receivers in the NFL. Last year, I named my team after him. I called him Codes to the Nukes for Nuke Hopkins, right? And here's my problem, though. He has this, I don't want to say breakout, but he has a very good year last year. I fear that I'm not calling him a fugazi at all, but I feel, to borrow your term, if you draft him where he's probably going to go, you're buying all the risk with DeAndre Hopkins. He, in essence, has to perform the same way he did last year in order to, you know, return the value for where he's being drafted. I'm seeing him drafted as, in essence, wide receiver 2, 3, 4 at the same level as like an Odell Beckham right behind Antonio Brown. Jake, do you agree? Is there really any value to try to get DeAndre Hopkins? Because you're going to have to spend like your fifth or sixth overall pick for him. If you want DeAndre Hopkins on your team, you're going to have to invest that first round pick for him. And is there really any kind of value there? Because he, in essence, has to repeat last year, right, Jake?
Well, the thing, first rounders, it's hard where to get that much return value anyway. It's a first round pick. I mean, what is going to, you know, you draft him at 6, he returned third pick value. Like, it's just, I don't really care that much about it. My bigger factor is, especially at wide receiver, if you want to make the number 2 wide receiver off the board, I don't care. You're buying all the risk, but you're also buying all the reward. I mean, it's tough to get that upset about anybody at that level. The only difference I'll say for DeAndre Hopkins is I'm not drafting him in that range because I'm still taking a running back. The first 7 picks for me are 6 running backs and Antonio Brown. Actually, the first 7 picks or 8 picks probably, I'd still only include Antonio Brown. It's just the fact that I'm taking a running back in the first round this year, even a PPR. I'm taking Bell, Gurley, Zeke, David Johnson, Barkley, Kamara, Hunt, and
Gordon.
If you're staring at
Gordon and DeAndre Hopkins, right? Let's say you're picking 9th in your league.
Can I answer? I have the answer. I'm trying to give you the answer.
Go ahead.
It's like I'm actually going Dalvin Cook. So before we even get to that, but I might diversify in Dalvin Cook just to say I'll take Dalvin Cook in some places and Melvin Gordon in others, just to, you know, because there's a big injury risk with Dalvin Cook. Everything sounds great as of today, but we're a long ways out. But you know this. I told you. I gave you the sneak preview of the bold prediction for Dalvin Cook, top five potential. So
he's in there over DeAndre Hopkins as well. Listen, do you buy anything? Listen, here's the one thing I will say about D-Hop, where there could even be more room there in the ceiling. DeAndre Hopkins has made, you know, T.J. Yates, Brock Osweiler, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, and others look good. Now, if he has a, you know, wherever you put him, a good quarterback in Deshaun Watson, both Clemson Tiger products, you know, there are people that are, you know, projecting DeAndre Hopkins could have, you know, could have like a 14-touchdown kind of year like Davante Adams did. Where do you think he lands in terms of touchdowns? Is it crazy to kind of assume just like because, you know, like Will Fuller had a crazy like touchdown output in those four games? Is it crazy to assume that with a full season of Deshaun Watson at quarterback that D-Hop can, you know, get like over 12 touchdowns this year?
No, I'm never going to bank on a wide receiver getting over 12 touchdowns. That's rare for anybody any given year. And just the fact that he got 13 last year was rare. I mean, he was the only person. And you can go back to the year before. The only person to get over 12 was Jordy Nelson. Evans and Brown were there with 12. But to get over 12 is rare. I will never project anybody to get over 12. It doesn't happen that often. It's very rare. So, you know, would it be a surprise? I would be like, oh, my God, I can't believe he scored 13 touchdowns. If he got like 16, I'd probably be pretty daggone surprised. But I think the expectation should be around 10, should be around double-digit touchdowns.
All right, fair enough. And listen, he is going to be a first-round pick, so if you want him, you better go out and get the D-Hopopotamus, DeAndre Hopkins. Talk to me about Will Fuller real quick. Is this a best ball kind of guy, Jake? Is that the kind of profile he is? You know, the stretch-the-field kind of guy? We'll have lower number of receptions, but we'll have the touchdowns, and the yards per catch will be pretty high on Fuller?
Yeah, and Fuller's also got consistency issues, but no, he's better than best ball. I'm still not. He needs to be your wide receiver three, though. That's the biggest thing, is he needs to be a three because there's week to week. It's Deshaun Jackson in his prime. It's Deshaun Jackson where, you know, you get six great games. As I say it all the time, six great games that tick you off, and then another four where it's kind of like, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, there will be those games, though, where he has the four catches for 147 yards and two touchdowns, and that will very much help you on that week, even if it is a best ball format. Hey, Jake, I know we don't talk defense a lot, okay? And I don't want to go deep into defense, but, you know, when the Houston Texans drafted Jadeveon Clowney at the top of the draft that year, their dream was to pair him up with J.J. Watt, and it's never really happened. You know, either Clowney kind of was injured at the beginning of his career. J.J. Watt has been in and out recently. They have Whitney Mercilus there as well. Listen, Jake, if Mercilus, Watt, and Clowney are all healthy, are all motivated, you know, tell me what these guys can do to opposing quarterbacks in this division and in the AFC. Do they set up to maybe be the best pass rush in the entire AFC? I would think about guys like Bosa and Melvin Ingram as well. Maybe the crew in Denver where you have Von Miller and they just drafted Bradley Chubb as well. But when I look at these guys in Houston, Watt, Mercilus and Clowney, could this be the best pass rush in the AFC?
It might be, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know for sure because, like you said, I don't pay that much attention to the individual players because I don't do a ton of ADP. So,
fair enough. But in team defenses, we say the things that you can try to count on, right, are sacks. You know, you can't count on these touchdowns. Those are flaky. But you look at a team that can get pressure on the passer. Right. And so even in team defenses, no, I'm not drafting. Well,
I said they could be.
10, but OK, fair enough. All right, Jake, I hear you. They could be, but he doesn't want to plant the flag on it just yet.
No, I'm not going to plant a flag on something I don't know enough about.
That's why you have the spitting statistician with you, because I have no problems doing that. Jake, the last thing I want to talk about here with the Houston Texans.
Wait, so are you? Because you didn't answer your own question then.
What's up? You know me, Jake. I am very, very high on that crew out there in Los Angeles with the Chargers. Give me Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram.
I'm looking right now. They were 23rd in sacks last year. They only had 32.
They also didn't have J.J. Watt there.
Okay, so you think he's going to make up 20?
No, I don't. I think he could make up 13, though. I think that could be viable. You know what I mean? And maybe.
So that gets him to 45. So that gets him to the top 10.
Yeah. So that's why I'm, and out of those other 10, how many of them were in the NFC and don't qualify for the question that I asked you? And I think you're talking about, you know, they're in the mix there. I think I was going to say San Diego, but
well, that's what I'm saying.
Los
you
Angeles.
Need to, that's what I'm saying. I wanted you to answer your own question.
Fair enough. I would say Houston, Los Angeles, and Denver would be the leading sack getters in the AFC. The last thing I really quickly want to bounce off you, Jake, I know you're not huge on schedule, but it sets up pretty good for the Texans, man. In November and December, they have 4 of their last 6 games at home, including home matchups with everybody else in the AFC South. And they're 2 road games. It's a back-to-back, but it's like that kind of sacrificial lamb. The second of the back-to-back is at Philadelphia. That's a game they may lose anyway. The first is at MetLife to take on the Jets. I think they could go 5-1 in their last 6 games. And if you think they're a playoff kind of team, having 4 games at home and the road game being the Jets, I think that sets up pretty well for your schedule, no?
It definitely does. I mean, when you see that on paper, but I'll never get caught into the whole strength of schedule stuff. You know, if anybody doesn't
know
by now, it's nonsense.
I know you, but to me, Jake, it's not even necessarily the strength of schedule. I just like that it sets up that they get to stay at home. Okay,
right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It looks great on paper.
All right. Well, we shall see. If you like the Houston Texans, their over-under is 8.5. If you think they got a shot of once again winning the AFC South, that could be your bet. Go on over to mybookie.ag, and you could get that bet if you think they're going to win 9 or more games. Enter the promo code FNTSY. You will get a 50% deposit bonus. Hey, Jake, when we come back, here's what I want to do, okay? 2 things. 1, we looked at your draft, you know, with the football diehards, and we saw some guy who actually stacked up Deshaun Watson and Will Fuller as his second wide receiver. I digress on that. Our guy, Nando DeFino, spent some time at the FSTA conference out there in Minnesota. He had a draft. We're going to look at Nando DeFino's team, and we'll also look at the early odds for the NFL MVP when we come back. It's the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, and the spitting statistician who has no problem saying things that may or may not be true. I like to poke the bear every now and then. In this situation, Jake Seeley is the bear. If you want to see that, come on right back. It's Roto Experts in the Morning. We got a poll question up as well. Let's go.
Join the family at Modell Sporting Goods. Visit your nearest Modell's and sign up for our MVP Rewards Program to receive insider deals all year round. Earn points on every purchase when you use your MVP card to earn Modell's cash back. It's our way of thanking you for being a loyal customer. Upon signing up, receive 10% off your purchase and 15% off your next purchase. It's that simple. Plus, new MVPs this month are eligible to win a $500 Modell's gift card. When you gotta play more and pay less, you gotta go
to
Modell's.
What a chance to win 2 tickets.
The champ is here. That's what we try to do here on Roto Experts in the Morning. We help you win your leagues and win that cash. It's the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, the spitting statistician, Speeds, Dane Martinez. Hey, Jake, I don't know if you saw right now, Aaron Judge, 57% of the vote. Chris Bryant, 43% of the vote. This may be one of the tighter ones of the second round. You think Chris Bryant still has a chance to overtake the Judge?
No, I think it'll end. I think I'll get it close. I think I'll skew it close because I've already moved it a little bit, but I don't think it's gonna get there.
Jake Seeley continues to move the needle. He's like WikiLeaks in October. It's amazing what Jake Seeley can do. All right, let's keep it moving here. One of the things we were gonna do here, you know, Jake, first of all, you've been in this industry a lot longer than I. I can only aspire to be like you when I grow up. Going on in Minnesota this week was the FSTA conference, right? Have you ever been there, Jake?
To Minnesota or to the FSTA?
To the conference.
No.
No.
I don't have that kind of cash.
You don't have that kind of cash. All right, fair enough. But our guy, Nando DeFino, representing the Fantasy Sports Network, he was there. You know, I saw him on Twitter, you know, throwing out all sorts of interesting stats and percentages and research about mostly how now that, you know, the ban on sports betting has been lifted federally and states have the choice to try to maybe get some cash and revenue for their state out of this. There was a lot of information about how the fantasy players are so likely to also bet on sports, to also bet specifically on football. The correlation is almost a full 1 point there, Jake. And I thought that was interesting. But I digress. They also did a draft out there at the FSTA. And our guy, Nando DeFino, correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, but was he using your kind of rankings as his parameters when he was drafting? It sounds like, you know, Nando texted me. He was like, yeah, I'm using Jake's rankings. Maybe that's why he wounds up with Jameis Winston in the 10th round as his first quarterback. Jake, we talk about waiting on quarterback. Your boy Carson Wentz was drafted in round 7, but in the same round, listen, round 7 in this draft, Tom Brady, Carson Wentz, Cam Newton, Drew Brees, and Kirk Cousins. Like, people could wait all the way to 7 and get themselves a Tom Brady. Nando waited all the way to round 10, got himself Jameis Winston as his QB1. What do you think about that, Jake?
I like it. Well, obviously, this changes after the news last night, but when he drafted, he didn't know about that. So that's, a situation you can't really handle is the fact that he might suspend it for week 1. But until that point, whether it's Winston or somebody else, I don't mind it at all. I actually love that he did that. But he wasn't entirely using my rankings. He was texting me, and I was actually texting him and saying, what the hell you were doing? Why'd you ask for my rankings if you're going to ignore them at points?
Fair enough. Yeah, just to catch people up, Jameis Winston, they are now expecting the NFL to levy a suspension on him because remember that incident he had with the Uber driver a few 2016, I believe, was that incident. And, they're expecting a suspension maybe between 1 and 3 games. We'll keep our eye out on that. Listen, Jake, we talked about DeAndre Hopkins, right, in the last segment. And Nando, when faced with this exact decision that we were talking about, 6 running backs were already off the board: Gurley, Zeke, DJ, Le'Veon, Alvin Kamara, and Saquon Barkley, and Antonio Brown, like you said. Nando was sitting in this exact position that we were just talking about. He decided to opt for DeAndre Hopkins over, Kareem Hunt, Melvin Gordon, Dalvin Cook, who you mentioned, a guy like Leonard Fournette, and even other wide receivers like Odell Beckham or potentially Michael Thomas, Julio Jones. What do you think about, he was faced with the exact scenario we were talking about. He went Hopkins. You would have gone, Cook or Gordon or Hunt in that situation?
Hunt. Definitely would have went with Kareem Hunt. And the fact is, especially because it was a 14-team league. Like, I understand getting DeAndre Hopkins there, but this is 14 teams, and you come back around, and right, Christian McCaffrey is his number one, which isn't terrible in a PPR. Honestly, looking at the draft, and you can't, there's two things here. Is one is I wouldn't have taken McCaffrey over Freeman, but two is right, if you look at it as well, you
could have Hunt and Evans.
Exactly. Well, or even Hunt and Thielen, even. And sure, the thing is, you knowing that Freeman was there or going to be there, I have no problem taking Hopkins and Freeman, but I don't think you can bank on Freeman necessarily making it back, because if one of those people doesn't take Evans, AJ Green, Adams, or Keenan Allen and takes Freeman instead, then you go back to what you just said. Now you do end up with Kareem Hunt or Mike Evans or even AJ Green because you bumped down one of the wide receivers for the Freeman pick. So I think it just kind of, it's one of those that could have skewed the draft either way. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to say he's crazy to do it. I'm not going to say anybody's crazy to do what they did. For the person that went Beckham and Evans, I wouldn't have done it, especially if you, God, those running backs are terrible. But the fact is I understand why people do it.
All right, and to your point, let me ask you one thing, Jake, because you mentioned it's a 14-team league. Usually when we're talking about, in general, kind of the default is 12 teams when we're just kind of talking about rankings and stuff like that. You make a good point, Jake. The fact that it is a 14-team league, does that, because to me, that would mean even more need in the first round to go and get that workhorse running back for you, right?
And World be Cup's like, tied up, by the way.
Oh, really? Goodness, yeah. Australia, back at it. That's interesting because at mybookie.ag, I was looking at betting some draws today. People forget about when betting soccer, like the draw is a lot of times, sitting there at plus 220 and a great option, but I digress. Jake, would you agree that even when it's a bigger league, 14, 16 teams, even more reason to prioritize that running back, that workhorse in round one?
Yeah, but you can't go, well, it's round 1 and 2. You can't go crazy because, if you're in a 14-team league and down where at the end of the first round by, like Corey Benigni and Mike Clay and stuff like that, let's say that Nando went Kareem Hunt, and let's say Melvin Gordon still goes in front of him, and somebody takes Dalvin Cook, So now you're there, and it's Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, Leonard Fournette. Well, what if somebody takes Leonard Fournette, too? What if you have eight running backs go off the board in the first round? You can't reach and make McCaffrey or McKinnon a first-round draft pick just because you want that running back. So at some point, there's always a breaking point, and that's why I say the first two rounds to get your bell cow.
Fair enough. It's all relative. Let's look at Nando's draft a little bit more. We talked about where he went up top. We talked about how he waited on quarterback. Here's what I want to ask you about, Jake. He goes Evan Engram in round five, okay, as the one, two, three, four, as the fifth tight end off the
board. And then texts me and says, I think I went too early on Engram.
Oh, is that right? Oh, look at this. We're getting behind the scenes exclusive access to the thinking of this draft. I was going to say the same thing, Jake. You know, I am personally down on Evan Engram as a tight end. I think part of the reason he popped off last year is because, quite frankly, he was just the last man standing for Eli Manning. Odell Beckham gone, Brandon Marshall gone, although who knows how big of an issue that would have been. Sterling Shepard missed some time in the middle of that season as well. I believe Ingram's numbers are kind of, inflated because of that. And then we talk about the pie all the time. I don't know if you think the Giants pie is going to get slightly larger. Maybe it'll be one of those 16-inch pies instead of the extra large 18-inch pies, whatever the case may be. But still, Jake, when you have Odell Beckham coming back and you have Saquon Barkley now there as a rookie, even a guy like Sterling Shepard there for the whole season, I personally think that his portion of the pie is going to be less this year, so he wouldn't be a top five tight end for me. What do you think about the Engram pick that high up, Fernando?
No, I still think he could be a top five. I wouldn't lock it in. Like if it, you know, it's, I wouldn't call it a guarantee, but it certainly can because, again, this is the pie. He's going to get bigger. Eli Manning didn't do that much last year because Eli Manning was only throwing to Evan Engram. Now, like his target percent and all that type of stuff will go down a little bit, obviously, because you just mentioned it, with Odell Beckham back on the field with Saquon Barkley. But when you go back to the fact that Eli only threw, you know, it didn't even near 4,000 yards. And if you go back to the back-to-back seasons of 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, he can be better. The team believes he can be better. So if he's going to get back to that Eli Manning, there's going to be more for Engram, and especially at least in the scoring aspect of it. So that all being said, I'm still not taking a tight end in the fifth round unless your name is Zach Ertz or Travis Kelce, but they're not making it that far anyway. Right. And then as he texted me, like you see what happens to the rest of the draft. It kind of skews the rest of your team. So it's just you have to understand when you make that kind of investment, what are the ramifications to the rest of your roster?
Absolutely. It's not only about that pick, right? But then it's about comparing where you could have gotten that position later on and what that would have meant for that pick and almost looking at it as a 2-for-2 kind of thing or a 3-for-3
right.
kind
and
of
you
thing.
Can look,
the impact
you can
has.
Look at it the fact is, all right, let's look at his third wide receiver is Robert Woods and his fourth is Lee and his third running back is Isaiah Crowell. Well, you could have Sonny Michel or Marshall.
It could have been someone.
Somebody that's going to be potentially an RB2 every single week. His wide receiver
Johnson in RB
three,
in PPR, yeah.
Wide receiver three could have been a wide receiver two, and then you have Robert Woods as your four, and then you still could have waited until round seven, to get what
you
we keep
get
getting.
Jack Doyle.
Kyle Rudolph, Delaney Walker. I mean, there's plenty of options later in the draft.
So what you have to do in this case study, Jake, is think about the difference of, say, Engram to a guy like Delaney Walker or Jack Doyle versus, like you're saying, just to throw out some of these names
As a sidebar?
Yeah.
I do not understand the two teams that took two tight ends when they did. Because look at those two teams. So one was they took Kyle Rudolph in round seven and then Trey Burton in round nine. Even if here's the thing, if Burton breaks out, you can't start him.
Is he
have
be a flex
Cooper,
for you? Could he be a flex for you?
No, because he has Cooper, Smith-Schuster, Lockett, and Matthews. So unless you're banking on one of those wide receivers busting out, he's not starting for you. It's impossible. And if you are banking on, well, now you just banked on a top eight round pick busting out as a wide receiver. That's insane to me. You look
Chris
at the other team.
The same.
Beckham, Evans, Hilton, Hogan. Now, forget busting out. You're definitively not starting anybody in the flex because those guys are going to be there every single week. When are you starting George Kittle? And if you're starting George Kittle and he breaks out, what are you doing with
Delaney
Walker?
The Titans have a bye, I guess. That's about it. The week Tennessee is on bye.
So I just don't understand that thought process. Like, I understand going Njoku and Eifert. That's different. And also because, you know, you're taking an upside on one of those potentially busting. Jordan Reed is always getting hurt and Hayden Hurst. Waiting on Austin Hooper and Ben Watson. That makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me when you're drafting somebody that could potentially be a top 10 tight end that you can't even start.
Right. No, I hear you. The only thing I could think about is he's obviously high on Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe he's looking for that San Francisco stack. But, Jake, we'll look further into this draft, some of what the other teams did. There's a couple.
I know. You're just talking about tight ends.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. There's a couple of teams who decided to wait on running back a little bit, like we were talking about yesterday. We'll dive into this a little bit more tomorrow. Tomorrow also, Jake, we'll have a little bit more time. Maybe we'll go into the early MVP odds for the season as well. We got the NBA draft coming up tonight, so maybe we'll do a little bit of a recap. We'll see if there was any trades that were made, like, you know, Dwight Howard going to the Nets. We'll see if there were any surprise picks or if there's any headlines coming out of that. We'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow on Roto Experts in the Morning. But as we end every show, Jake, we got to go on over to Roto Clio. I got a win out of Morton yesterday. As I told you, Joey Gallo steals a base but does not go yard. You get the go homer out of Giancarlo, who dropped the mic both literally and figuratively for you. Where are you going today? You know, you can give me them both, on the hill or at the dish.
I'll attack one person at the same time. How about that? Does that sound good?
Okay, fair enough. Where are we going?
I'm going to Cincinnati and attacking Matt Harvey twice. So the Cubs will put up enough runs that Kyle Hendricks gets the win because it's Matt Harvey. And then on the other side of it, I almost said Schwarber, but he's been very hit or miss lately. And similar to Stanton, I am taking a bigger name, but I'm taking a bigger name to get off the Schneid and hit a home run. It's been a little bit quiet lately, so I'm taking Anthony Rizzo to wake up. I'm going to start waking people up. I'm going to wake them up. I'm going to get them rolling again.
I like that, Jake. I think we have the ability here on Roto Experts to inspire people. You clearly did that with Giancarlo Stanton yesterday. We clearly did that with both Jose Altuve.
I told you, I was going to get him off the Schneid.
Yeah, we did that with both Altuve and Stanton yesterday, putting them up in our poll. They wanted to kind of help you lobby. Jake, you are moving the needle. I'm telling you, it's now 54-46 in favor of the judge. This is going to be a close one. I'll be interested to see how this one shakes out. All right, Jake, we have your picks entered. Listen, Max Scherzer's on the hill today, you know, so that could be easy. But I want to avoid, you know, I want to avoid all the hate coming out of the All-In Kid when I just go chalky because I got the W out of Morton yesterday. I'm going to go Tyler Skaggs. I'm going to go Tyler Skaggs today, Jake. I like him. He's at home against the Blue Jays. The Angels are -150 favorites. Skaggs pitching to a below 3 ERA. I think he can get it done. And you talk about attacking pitchers. You're attacking Matt Harvey. I'm going to go ahead and attack Lucas Giolito, all right, there with the Chicago White Sox. I like that the Oakland A's are in town. Remember, Oakland put up 12 runs, I believe, yesterday, and they're getting a good ballpark shift going away from Oakland. They're on the road. I'm going to go with a guy who has been hot. Give me Matt Olson to go yard today off of Lucas Giolito. So I've got Skaggs and Olson today. How's that sound for you, Jake? You think I can maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to close the gap, Jake.
No, that works. It's going to be tough, though.
Yeah, I know, okay? I know. I'm trying to – listen, though, today Mike Leone also said that Matt Olson could be going yard. Big shout-out to our guy J-Rod, who plays with us every day as well. He had J.A. Happ for the win, so he gets a little bit of points there. Unfortunately, though, Jake, he is not catching up to you, has not – earned himself a free exclusive edge package. Jake, we only got about a minute left. I know you are like hardcore along with the King, Scott Angle, talking about some of these articles that are out there. They're going to be dropping over the next couple of days. What are some of the things you're seeing? You talked to me about the Mike Leone zero RB, zero wideout theory. We know that I'm doing some things on defenses to look at because they made some changes in the offseason. What are some of the other things people can expect in the coming days when the exclusive edge package drops, Jake?
No, I'm not. They could go back and listen to yesterday's episode.
Wow. Jake is not playing around. Fair enough. Jake, last thing.
I don't. Asking me. I don't know which ones are with the launch or which ones are coming after that. So I'm not going to, like, just go get the exclusive edge package. You'll be able to see as soon as you sign up.
It's all good. We got a little outing tonight, Jake. Carton and Friends is up next here on the Fantasy Sports Network. We're going out a little bit tonight. We're going bowling, okay? We made some teams here, and one team has, like, me, Craig, and Bavona. Another team has Corey, Frank, and Lou on it. One team has Ventra, Sussman, and Matt Modica. Another team has Florio, You know, like where who do you think is going to be the best team tonight? Who do you think is the best bowler out of the Fantasy Sports Network, Jake?
I don't know. Honestly, no clue.
All right, I
Cardano.
Think apparently. Ooh, that's interesting. I hear Chris Pavona was the number one overall pick. I'll let you know how it wound up.
I couldn't care.
All right, I'll let you know how that wound up. We'll see how the NFL draft winds up. We'll preview the Jacksonville Jaguars and more. Have a great day, Jake. I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay? Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Sale. That
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.